Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Marika Verheyen. Before I bring her on, just a couple of announcements. You can always get regular episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Go check us out on Rockfin. This is where you get our premium content, regular shows, and best of all the awesome content from every creator on Rockfin. Check out the new podcasts that we feature on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. You can get them all in one place. That's our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. You can also follow us on Facebook. Those links are in the description. You can follow us there to get show announcements and updates. And please check out our merch store. You can get some shirts, hoodies, stickers, and all kinds of awesome FKN gear. And check out C60 Purple Power. This may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man. The benefits are amazing. I feel great, and you should too. Just click the link in the description. You get 10% off your order, plus free shipping. Today I want to welcome Marika Verheyen. She is author and researcher and has a varied international background in management, social, and humanitarian organizations. She has spent the past decades weaving a human and unifying tapestry in the area of holistic health and healing. She is a founding member of the Pyramid for Light Foundation and describes herself as a humanist and connector and co-creator with a deep faith and trust in our divine potential and purpose. Marika, welcome. How are you today?
Great. Well, thank you for inviting me to your show, Chris. It's great to be here with you and with all the audience that is listening. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I was been looking forward to this. The existence of pyramids worldwide is really a fascinating enigma, and it remains a mystery on many levels: the construction, the purpose, the age, energetic properties, and what it consists of. And today you're going to share some of the fascinating information you have about the mystery surrounding the pyramids, and talk about the Pyramid for Light Foundation, and plenty of other interesting, fascinating things that you're involved with. First, this is your first time on. I'd love you to tell the audience a little bit more about yourself, background, and what led you down this path you're on.
Okay. Yeah, you just heard it. My name is Marika Verheyen. I'm originally from the Netherlands. I live in Spain, which is in the southern part of Europe. And my background is basically I was in an international position, more business-related position. And until about 20 years ago, I came across a spiritual healer, Alex Orbitov. And to make a long story a bit shorter, he invited me to accompany him on his spiritual healing missions around the world. So this is where I first encountered, well, I would say, completely new world to me. And from here, I organized several international conferences around spiritual healing and with healers. And this particular healer, who is, I would say, particularly in the Philippines, among spiritual healers, quite known, quite famous. A lot of different books have been written about him, including Shirley MacLaine in her book Going Within. He was always fascinated by pyramids because, since he had been in a pyramid himself in Egypt, it just mesmerized him, the powers that he felt. And so, as an introduction of myself, very briefly, I accompanied him on many of these journeys. And it's a person who went a lot into trance, so channeling, so allowing for other entities to come through and using his body basically as an instrument. So it received quite a lot of messages. And it talked a lot about the powers of the pyramid and also to build eventually a pyramid for light.
Now, this gentleman, his name is Alex Orbito, right?
That's right. That's his name. Yeah. It's he passed away a year ago. And recently, a documentary dedicated to his life has been made that went into release a couple of weeks ago in Europe. Yeah. Yeah, and his name is Alex Orbito, that's right. So if you Google him, you'll find many, many, many lists of information. Obviously pro and con, because it's one of those healers, one of the few that had the ability to penetrate a physical body. So wherever he would go, you can imagine the masses and masses of people that would show up.
Now, could you tell us about what it was that you witnessed that really kind of got you, made you believe that this was a real phenomenon?
Okay. It started first with my own treatment, because I visited him. He came to Barcelona, and one of the shareholders of the company had a tumor, a brain tumor that could not be operated upon. And so I accompanied him because he didn't. He only spoke Spanish, so he asked me to accompany him to translate. And when he saw the whole audience, he was a little bit more like hesitant, because this was obviously an unknown field to him. And this is a very wealthy Spanish man, access to a lot of different doctors. So he eventually said, "Marika, why don't you go first? I can watch what he's doing to you, and then I can decide if I go myself." So I found myself suddenly on the table. I thought, what am I doing here? Because I felt totally healthy, but I smoked a lot. And I came off that table and I wondered what he had done. But from that day on, I never smoked a cigarette anymore in my life. I was just felt like, I don't want to smoke anymore. So he removed quite some nicotine from my lungs. So that was my first impression. But over the years, I've witnessed 1,000 operations. So obviously, I can be for sure that it's something authentic. What I've seen that really makes quite an impact is when he took out the eyeball of the eye. It's not a pleasant sight, but sometimes people had eye problems. So he would really remove the eyeball, clean it, bloop, and put it back
again. Oh,
wow. Yeah, so that's quite impressive, yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Now, how does the healing work that he's doing, how does this connect to pyramids and what pyramids can do energetically?
So Alex Obito, since a little child, dreamt about pyramids. He never had seen, he didn't know what it was. He just knew that shape. So he kept drawing those pyramids. So his parents eventually, and on the school, they told him that is called a pyramid and they exist, for example, in Egypt. So later on in his life, when he was able to travel, the first destination he went to was Egypt. And when he entered the king's chamber, he was blown away. It just so impacted him. And he felt how all his energies were sort of aligned in an instant. And this confirmed to him that the healing properties of a pyramid, that the pyramid somehow balances the electromagnetic energies in a human body, and that it somehow you get more into a balance the moment you start, the moment you spend more time inside a pyramid. So since he was a healer and all his life he had been pursuing healing people, he just felt, I need to build a pyramid in order to further support the healing process of people. So this is the connection, if you like, between him as a healer, but also the pyramids, because quite a lot of studies have shown how, due to the angle and how it's built, it is a perfect balance. It creates a perfect balance of electromagnetic waves. And so this is where he built actually his first pyramid. That was the Pyramid of Asia Healing Center. It was not the Pyramid for Light. That was quite a different story. But this is the connection between the two. And
go ahead. What were you saying?
Oh, no. What might be interesting in India, there's a huge society, spiritual pyramid society, where they practice particularly meditation inside pyramids, because it deepens the experience and it supports going deeper into a field which some call the field or the unified field or the quantum field. So the pyramid energies support that deepening process.
Do you think that this was the original purpose for the pyramids being constructed, is for these healing and these energetic properties to be utilized?
I think it's one element, but I think there are quite more elements to it. And this is, I sense the pyramid is also a structure that allows for But here I cannot show any proof. It's purely intuitive what I'm saying right now. It is also a structure that helps to communicate on other levels. So but I think there are much more the people that have so much more knowledge about this, how pyramids can communicate with other realms. Yeah, even obviously universal energies. They create this, I would say almost, it's on one side a generator, but also an amplifier of energies. Quite some studies have been done on that. And recently, it's even mainstream. In 2018, a team of Harvard has done some scientific studies saying it indeed, it is like a concentrator of energies. And so they're even trying to copy that particular field that's created in order to generate energy. And it seems even your Tesla, many were like fascinated by these properties of the pyramids. But I would say we're only at the beginning to further comprehend the powers that the pyramids have. And the last detail I would like to mention, I was once in the pyramid of Bosnia, where there's a quite a large pyramid that they discovered close to Sarajevo, a huge one. It's even much bigger than the one of Egypt. And studies shown it's a much older one. It's more than 30,000 years old. And its founder, Sam Osmanogic, we were met by him and we visited the place. Alex Obito was there. He went in full trance. And what was interesting, the message that came through, now obviously this is a spirit message, but I found it fascinating. It said, more pyramids will be discovered all around the world. And in those days, advanced times, advanced civilizations, long time ago, used the pyramids in order to communicate long distances with other pyramids, but also intergalactically. And they communicated through the apex. There was a crystal in the apex that made the pyramid the most quite powerful. It was through that crystal in the apex that they could communicate. And this spirit that came through said, we knew that darker times were coming and the pyramids can be used for light, but also for darkness. And so what they did is they removed the crystals from the apex in a way to disarm the pyramids so they could not be used for a wrong purpose. But the spirit also said, soon time will come again for huge transformation on planet Earth, and the crystals at one point will be placed back again.
So do you think these crystals are a missing piece in all the pyramids around the planet?
I think in many. Yeah, in many of them. Yeah.
That's very
and
interesting.
That really creates a huge power in those pyramids. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's fascinating. Now, you mentioned the King's Chamber earlier and how there's, you know, people have profound experiences there. I've even spoke to plenty of people who've had out-of-body experiences. Some people say they can't even help it. It's like their spirit just pops out when they're in there. Is this something that you find very common when people, you know, going into the King's Chamber and experiencing this?
I've only been twice in the King's Chamber, and so I would definitely not consider myself an expert. I wouldn't dare to go into this subject. What I can only say from my own experience is it's a place out of time and space almost, being in that chamber. I've been there. It was in 2010. It's quite an interesting story what actually happened there, because while we were building the Pyramid for Light, we had been asked by Spirit to visit the Pyramid of Giza, and so it was a lot of tourism was there. I think it was in August, and so every time going, you know, you go up these stairs, and then you come into the King's Chamber. There was somebody guiding the groups coming in and out. So constantly you were with at least 30, 40 people inside the King's Chamber. And the night before going into that chamber, Alex went again into trance and channeled the message to do a certain ritual inside the King's Chamber, placing hands together, chanting Om, and and to feel the vibration of the place when you've of the king's chamber chanting Om. So here we went the following day with those instructions. We come inside the king's chamber, but obviously having so many tourists going in and out and with somebody standing there making sure there is this influx and out of people, it was impossible for us to chant Om with all the tourism that were very loud. And then next thing that happened is, so I think this is also one of these lapses where there's no time and space. All of a sudden, nobody was there anymore. Everybody was gone. There was only Alex Obito left in the king's chamber and myself. And it was then suddenly somebody came inside. I had not seen this person before. Mm-hmm. He directed me to stand on one side of a wall, Alex to another side. And he was on another place. And he himself started to chant Om. We didn't do anything. And then next thing was he did, he took both of us and placed us inside this sarcophage that is right in the middle. Then he placed his hand in his head inside and started to chant Om again. And the sound was just, whoa, it was like everything became sound. So it was an amazing experience. I can't say it's an out of body experience, but it was time stood still. Suddenly, everybody was gone. So to me, it was a lapsus in time. And then the moment we stepped out of it, you know, all the tourism, it was like, oh, all the bus and buzzing people, they stepped in again. So that's an experience I can share that was inside Gita.
That's very fascinating.
I think we're, there's still so much that we can learn from pyramids and explore.
Now there is an interesting aspect to the inauguration of the Pyramid for Light, isn't that right?
Yeah, well, the whole creation of the Pyramid for Light, we were not planning to build a Pyramid for Light, but this was also a spirit message asking us to build the Pyramid for Light. And
well, tell us about what the Pyramid for Light is and how the message came and, you know, all the details surrounding that.
With pleasure. So here there's a cave in the Philippines where Alex, as a healer, would regularly bring people inside a cave for meditation. And increasingly, a spirit entered. Her name is the Lady of Light. That's how she presented herself. And every time she would enter, she would be accompanied by certain birds that would make a very particular sound in this cave, like tick, 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 tick. So whenever the birds were there, we knew she was approaching. And next thing, she would very often enter into Alex's body. His voice would change. So her name is Lady of, she presented herself as the White Lady or the Lady of Light. And I know I presented this story now a few times, and every time I say the same, you know, just be open-minded and open-spirited, because some things I just could not fathom or even imagine myself what happened.
Right.
But the story that I'm going to tell, I'm going to share with you in the audience, Chris, I always say, I've never been alone. We were always with a group of people. It was almost documented, because if not, I would have, I'm sure I would have said, you know, I was just, you know, whatever, hallucinating or so, just for you to know.
Well, yeah, I have a very open-minded audience, so looking forward
to
hearing.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So the spirit entered and said, please build the Pyramid for Light. My light and my power has been hidden inside this cave for more than 2,000 years. And it's time for my light to come out of this cave into the world. And for that, I ask you to build the Pyramid for Light. So in the beginning, we thought, huh? Building a Pyramid for Light? Because the spirit is asking us this in the middle of a pristine forest in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So obviously, we had a lot of questions and hardly any answers. But then something happened. I'm going to share this story, which made us realize that other powers are in play here. With a group of people, we were asked to come inside of this cave. And this is a group of people from different continents, from actually from Americas to Europe to Egypt to Asia. And so it took a while for all these people to come together inside the cave in the Philippines, but eventually they were all there. We did a meditation, and early morning we went deeper inside this cave where you have a huge lake and this cascade of water always running down. It's a beautiful place, by the way. And so we were seated there, and spontaneously we started to chant Om. And I was seated next to Alex, and by then, since I accompanied him so much on his journeys, I knew quite, it was quite easy to understand when he was going into trance because his whole body would like cramp in the beginning. And this happened also while we were sitting around the lake. And next thing, he raises his hand, hits the water in this huge lake. And the word came, change, but very loud, while he hit the water. And in that same instance, the whole lake that was transparent, beautiful water with this cascade running down all the time, it was deep inside the cave, it instantly changed from transparent into a red lake, the whole lake. We were just seated there looking inside the lake. We just could not believe our eyes. So we put all flashlights looking, but the whole lake had turned into red. Alex stayed for a while in trance and said afterwards, this is the energy of Christ. With just one hand hitting the water, the lake had changed colors. For many years, I couldn't even tell the story without crying. Now I can, fortunately, but it was such a out of time space experience. I mean, to see how in one single second the whole lake changed color. And it's not a small lake, it's a huge lake in this cave. We left the cave. I think we stayed in silence for quite some hours. None of us could say anything. And the following morning, there is one man in our group who is a neurologist, a scientist, a lot of research, a lot of documentation always. And he said, oh, I would be really curious if the lake is still red or if it went back to its transparent color. So we called a man in the neighborhood and asked him to enter inside the cave. And he called us crying on the phone and said, I've never seen this before. The lake, I can't see the lake. There's a huge fog above the lake, and inside it shows a rainbow, which is quite unusual, obviously, deep inside a cave. And
Yeah.
I would say, Chris, that was the moment where we realized we just cannot comprehend what's happening, but we just need to follow the guidance that's coming. And to me, it was also quite a turning point where I thought, let's trust, we go for it. Even if it's unknown, we have a million questions. We just follow the guidance here. This is beyond our mental comprehension, obviously.
Now,
So,
how did you know, or how did he know that this spirit was a benevolent or positive spirit that, is trying to help and not trying to deceive? Some may wonder that.
very good question. I would say because overall, for two reasons. One is that the healer Alex Zorbito is somebody with a very high vibration, a very kind, loving. He would never judge, there wouldn't come any negative word from his lips. So it was somebody with a high vibration. He was called in very often also to remove negative spirits, etc. And it's interesting whenever there's like a black magic involved of a person to see the fight between light and darkness. But what is interesting is that eventually light always wins. So then angels would come in or spirits of light would come in. But you can see the fight though. So that's one. So the vibration of the person who channels is essential to have a higher vibration, because if it's a lower vibration, it attracts obviously different spirits. So that's one. And second is that the messages that would come through would always be based on kindness, on love, on very, there would be never, also, we would never be told, do this, do that. Always a very kind, high vibrational messages. There is never anything of deceiving or deception. The driving force would always be love and light.
Now, some of these messages were very profound, especially for the times that we're in right now, right?
Yeah. So the messages also that came through all the time, and this became a mantra throughout, I would say, building the pyramid for light, mm-hmm. is that the task that we had in front of us was quite impossible because we were asked to build or advised. There was never a imperative, you need to, you must. It was always in a gentle tone. But this Lady of Light asked us to build the pyramid, to inaugurate it on 11-11-11. And when we looked at the calendar, it was a full moon, particularly at 4 o'clock in the morning. It was full moon in the Philippines. But this was at the end of 2010. So we thought we have less than a year to build a highly sophisticated building using all the right geometrical proportion, which is the golden ratio, etc. So we people from all over the world wanted to join. So it was not only a matter of building a pyramid, we also needed to build the infrastructure to host all the people. So it's also accommodation, kitchen, bathrooms, etc., etc. And eventually when we signed the construction contract, it was April. So we had 6 months to build. So everybody said, it's impossible. Even the construction company said, not easy task.
And what was the location that you decided to build?
In the Philippines.
Right. Is there, a specific location you can give that people want to, look it up or maybe even go see it themselves?
Sure. There's also a website, pyramidforlight.org, but it is in the northern area of what is called Pangasinan. And many different mystics consider this a part of Lemuria, ancient Lemuria. And the many caves also in that area, and some of the caves, there's quite a lot of crystals inside the cave. So I would say it is a very particular area where I do believe there's quite a lot of ancient knowledge from ancient civilization. So this area it's close to a place that's called Alaminos, but it's really a forest, completely in the middle of the forest. Where we eventually then built this this pyramid for light. So the 6 months, Chris, that we had to build, it fell right in the middle of the rainy season. So we had all the obstacles that you can imagine. We had zero on our bank accounts, and this was a costly operation. So on every level, you would think this is really mission impossible. And this is, to me, the biggest message of the Pyramid for Light, which I experienced myself in this time. Mm-hmm. When people come together in a more selfless manner, opening their hearts, and I'm not meaning, opening hearts and just, I love that, but really opening from an unconditional love perspective, when they unite that energy for a higher purpose, whoa, it really, really moves mountains. So to make that a longer story of like 6 months with all the obstacles that we had, we did make it possible. And there were so many obstacles, problems. The rainy season that we had was the worst in decades. So we could not build as was planned. Everything needs to be done manually. And every time we sort of felt we need to consult this spirit, the white lady who asked us to build the Pyramid for Light with all our problems and challenges, she said, united in love and light, everything is possible. United in love and light, everything is possible. So what we eventually understood is the moment there was an obstacle, an outer obstacle, there was also an obstacle inside one of the teams. Let's say a little bit ego issue, I want such, you want that. And so it forced us every time to sit around the table, listen deeply to each other. And the moment the obstacle was removed, it was like instantly there would be a phone call or that something would happen showing us the door would be open again. So it was an enormous learning process for us to set aside our little egos and to constantly seek this unified field that vibrates with not just love, but really unconditional love, really wanting, working for a higher purpose, higher than an uplifting purpose, a purpose that would serve. And this is the deeper message of the Pyramid for Light. And this has been always around all the retreats and all the work that we've done so far around this place. Because, and this is another message that happened around the Pyramid for Light, that so far we never wanted to share on the website because, you know, easily it can be misinterpreted. Mm-hmm. But at one point, again in this cave, Alex started to choke a lot. And we were, again, many around him. But from his throat, and fortunately for him, he was in trance, stones emerged. Quite big shape, so I don't know how they got through his throat, and it was one after the other. And with the first stone, it was, I think it was Michael, it said, "I'm Archangel Michael, this is my stone." A second stone appeared, and this way four stones, one after the other, appeared, each time with a different voice and of a different archangel. And telling us where to place the stone inside the Pyramid for Light. And again, Chris, I was not alone. There are many people all surrounding him. And
you think it was angels, the entities that you were interacting with?
Yeah, I think through his body, different energies entered, mm-hmm. materializing. Some consider it teletransporting from a different dimension, these stones. What also happened is that we had different geobiologists in the team that were measuring on the land because we were wondering where exactly do we need to build this Pyramid for Light. And so they detected different vortexes, very strong energy points. The first one vibrated on red, just like the cave. Mm-hmm. The second one on the color orange. And subsequently, we detected there was a whole chakra path progressively increasing in vibration until we found the last one, which was the crown chakra. When they connected all these different dots, you can see a fetus or ear. So we understood it's the symbolism for us as human beings at this moment. Yeah, how to say it bestly, to make a shift and to further embrace the divinity, the divine human being that we all are. But we've gone so deep into, in a different path of consumerism, of our ego. But I do believe we live in a time where we're making quite a big shift as humanity to further step into potential that we hardly tapped into. So we detected this chakra path, but then came the question, so where are we going to place the Pyramid for Light? And then the two geobiologists followed the track, found this place in the middle of the forest without any trees or hardly any trees. It was quite an open platform. And they felt probably it's here because they detected several ley lines, crossings of ley lines. There was a crossing of platinum ley lines, of sacred ley lines, of platinum, silver, golden ley lines, and different vortexes. But they were not coming together on one particular point. They were all like sort of 100 meters from each other. Hmm. Then one geobiologist said, well, in ancient times, they would sort of call upon nature to help. And ask for all these different points to move and come together on one particular point. Let's try that, he said. I was there too. Again, it was a group of people.
Right.
And he said, he took four people and they said, I was one of the four. He said, imagine you're a pillar. So let's imagine we as humans form this pyramid already. Just imagine you're a pillar. So I stood there imagining I'm a pillar too. And then we do a ritual and we ask for all these different energy points to move and to get to superimpose each other on one particular point. The moment we imagined being that human pyramid, it was like, again, this moment out of time and space, I would like to call it, this moment of magic. There was this gust of wind. There were sounds. It only lasted for a few minutes. It suddenly stopped. Then one of the geobiologists of the team, he started measuring and he said, I can't believe it. It just all shifted. Right here is now the point where all these crossings have united. He cried, you know, he went on his knees. He cried. He said, in all my career, I've never experienced this before. But, and now comes the thing, what happened? Alex was one of them. He came forward into trance again. Poor man, constantly going into trance, full trance. So he would collapse, you know. We would always have somebody in his back because he would just fall flat. And so he, while being in trance, he said, please all come forward and place the hands on each other. We were eight, so you imagine it was a big pile of 16 hands. Underneath, he asked to place a candle, a white candle. And next thing what happened is we could hear an explosion. And then around us, there was this perfect round shape of flames, but all around us. So we looked and we said, oh, what's happened? What's happening here? And then Alex said, right in this point, start digging. It was April, and April in the Philippines means it's at the end of the dry season. It hasn't been raining. It's very dry. The soil is like cement. It hasn't got a drop of water for weeks. And so start digging. We had no clue how to dig, what we're digging for. So we started with our bare hands. One fortunately had a little spoon from lunch. So we used the spoon and we kept digging and we used some water. We kept digging and digging for hours. And then eventually we reached roughly half a meter and we hit on something harder. From there emerged a beautiful egg-shaped white stone. It was like as big as this, what I'm showing you on the screen. Mm. And there was one lady from Lebanon who was in the group. And I remember she said, boy, this was a difficult delivery. I'm sure they're twins. Huh. And then next thing Alex said, keep digging. And right underneath that first stone appeared a second identical white stone. Again, shape of an egg. And then underneath there, we could see almost like my pink, like this tube going, we don't know where. Did it come from the center of the earth? We just don't know. We just saw this beautiful round tube underneath, like little hole. When the geobiologist measured these two stones, one vibrated on pure yin energy, so feminine energy, and the other on pure yang, pure masculine. And so we understood that this stone, the yang stone, the masculine stone, to place it in the apex of the pyramid, where the four pyramids join, and the yin, we placed it in the heart of the pyramid.
Did you ever test the stones for what type of material they were consisted of?
No, we felt, I mean, this was so sacred. No one, even if you think like somebody played, we couldn't. We didn't even know what the center of the pyramid would be. We discovered it that day. And from there, we found these two stones. So for us, it felt almost like, I would say, I'm respectful in a way to further investigate these stones. I remember holding them in the hands. It was so warm at the... So we only measured that because several geobiologists were with us. So they were measuring the vibration of the stone. So that's why I know it was pure yin and pure yang vibration. But we kept them in a very secure place until the pyramid was at such a point where we could place these two stones. And more stones have been materialized and always with a very clear indication where to place it inside the pyramid. So this makes the story like fascinating of the Pyramid for Light. We're now writing a book about it because at the time messages came through about what's happening actually, I think right now, how humanity will make a big shift. It will not be an easy transit, but to always seek the enormous powers that come from love and light. And it's only since what's happening last year and this year that also for myself understand the bigger purpose, and how experience that when you really come together with a dedicated group of people where you're able to set your ego aside and to open a heart, it can literally move mountains. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Now, in your lectures, you talk about heart intelligence. What exactly do you mean by that?
Having gone through that experience and seeing how the impossible becomes possible, because there have been so many synchronicity, where almost literally mountains moved, I just needed to know more. I thought, what is this power? What was able to shift so much? It was such an uplifting experience. And people that were involved, you know, it's almost like a drug, because once you experience that uplifting energies, you know, you definitely want more. And it's from here that I went further into exploring more. What is the heart? What does the heart do? What is the heart intelligence? And it's also, I did several seminars and studies, also with an American institute. Maybe you've heard about it, Heart Math Institute.
Yes.
That did a lot of different studies on the heart and the power of the heart. I've been with accompanying Alex, I've been to different labs in different countries, also particularly one lab, which is the International Biophoton Lab in Germany, with Professor Fritz Popp, who did a lot on exploring more the light atoms. And they were interested in the healing powers of Alex and see what is happening to the body. So with him, they also saw that the moment he's healing, there is such a love he develops for the person that he's healing, that the biophotons that emit from his hands and heart, those the two, is enormous. Normally we emit, a normal human being emits like roughly 20 photons a second. But in the case that you get into this heart vibration, sending love to a person or healing to a person in an unconditional way, so I'm not talking about I love you, but you love me too. And I'm talking about the unconditional. It increased from 20 to 100,000. So it was multiplied by 5,000, the biophotons, the emission. So this has been recorded, these studies in the lab in Germany. And it coincides with what HeartMath is saying. That is that the heart's electromagnetic field is 5,000 times stronger than the one of the brain, because I always thought it's the brain, you know, the brain is the supercomputer that governs all. And it's not. It's many of the impulses come first through our heart. So a lot of information goes from heart, brain, body, to put it very simple. And there's one study that HeartMath actually did in 2004 with its scientific director, which is Rolling McCrady. And I think it shows very clearly talking about heart intelligence. They placed two different groups into their lab. One practiced heart coherence, and heart coherence is actually really focusing on, it's a heart-centered breathing, really focusing on your heart and how you come into the state of gratitude, of compassion. So one group practiced heart coherence and the other group did not. Then both groups were placed on, you know, they all got the different monitors and they received images totally at random. And the images were either very peaceful, very loving, or very violent. Now the group that did heart coherence, so really being in this heart-centered state, of balanced state, in general, many of them felt 4 seconds, roughly 4 seconds, before the image appeared, they already had a first signal that entered through the heart, saying, this is violent, or wow, this is nice. That went to the brain, and the brain obviously reacted. The group that did not do the heart coherence, that had no preparation, did not have this intuition, let's say, of what image would appear. So they scored much less than the group that was more centered in their heart. And many, I mean, this is one study that was done, but I think it's a very nice one, which shows that the heart taps into a larger field and perceives more intuition than our brain. Our brain is obviously an enormous computer. It's amazing, you know, how it all processes the information. But the intuitive intelligence is not from the brain. It comes mostly from the heart.
Now, you were saying that he was able to perform healings using, you know, this unconditional love and this heart intelligence. And you were talking to me before the show about psychic surgeries. Is this something that's involved with that?
Yes. A healer, many of the healers, when you ask them who have this ability, they say, I need to put my own ego aside, and then I can allow for a spirit, another energy to come through. And what they typically feel is this expansive energy of love when a patient comes in. And yes, the ability, I mean, many books have been written. How come certain people have that ability of entering a human body? Mm-hmm. Alex himself as a healer was quite surprised when he was young and all of a sudden spontaneously had that ability, because at one point he was a man who was in a lot of agony and pain. He was treating him, just doing magnetic healing, so placing the hands on the body. And he prayed. He prayed deeply, saying, you know, please help this man. He's in so much pain. And suddenly he felt something very warm. So he looked down and he was fear struck because he saw blood and his hands were inside the body. So he got them out. He thought, oh, my God, I'm going to end up in jail because maybe this patient will die. I mean, there's so much blood. But the blood disappeared. Oh. And it was thanks to his mother, who was quite a psychic herself, who, you know, explained some people have this ability of entering in the body. And Alex himself said, I don't know how it come. I have this ability. I just surrender. That's why he went through so many different researchers, because he said, I like to know also how come I have this ability and not somebody else. Definitely there were certain words, very powerful words, that were passed on within the family. That's one that they could not just give like that. He received these words from his mother. But there's, he said, there is really this total surrender, because the moment you think, I can't do this, I cannot penetrate with my hand, you already block yourself. So it is a way of being total open and to be in total surrender, which for us human beings, and particularly in Western countries, is very difficult.
Right.
But in their culture, they grow up with everything comes from God, everything comes from a higher purpose, and everything has a higher purpose. So why should we limit that and think this is not possible?
Could you give us some examples of the psychic surgery that has been performed?
I mean, the psychic surgery could be performed on anything. I mean, any type of sickness, everything. So there was not any restriction to say, I can't do such or so. The only thing many healers say, and this is in common, they say the moment a person already underwent a certain surgery, it's difficult to restore that. But I mean, no matter cancer or tumors, they would treat anything. Yeah, they just said what is so important is to cooperate. because we obviously create a sickness unconsciously ourselves. And so it is to comprehend that you also created that sickness. So that awareness, yes, is important. But they would treat any type of sickness, so it would not be that certain, you know, that there would be restrictions in that manner. And sometimes you would even see how physically tumors would come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating to see how much our health and, you know, sickness and disease can be just connected to the power of our positive thinking and thoughts, and you know, how things can be healed energetically without even any intrusion. I've heard of plenty of things being, you know, some say it's miraculous, but it's more of a type of energy, right?
Totally, yeah. And I think the moment you get a disease, I mean, it's a long process, but obviously it doesn't come just dropping from one day to the other. It has to do with many different factors in which, you know, it's lifestyle, it is the level of stress, it is, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? What is your life's mission? But a very important, as you just mentioned, Chris, is how do you think? The way we are positive or negative mindset, I mean, it's energy, it's pure energy. So the word, for example, cancer already, it has such a negative impact on people. Instead of saying cancer is basically your body is trying everything it can to heal itself, but there comes a moment where the disbalance is just too big. And where the body is just screaming and saying, please, you know, we need to follow a different course here. And the moment you understand that, I would say it's half of the healing already is in that process. To say, you know, I created it unconsciously. So it is, to me, I find often a sickness is quite an opportunity. It's an eye opener to say, my body really tries to get this message across, but I'm not listening. And so often a sickness is a way to stop, reflect, and very often follow a different course in your life.
Right. Now, I think it would be great to close out by talking about the powers of the heart's electromagnetic field, personally, socially, and even planetary, and how it kind of connects to everything, you know, the ley lines of the planet, the other planets in our solar system. Yeah, talk a little bit about that to close out today.
Okay, great. Well, here I need to give all the credit to HeartMath because they did really a lot of studies. I would say it's the pioneer institution that exists, I would almost say worldwide, that has been dedicated 30 years exclusively to the heart field. So its founder, Doc Cheldre, when he started 30 years ago, he was ridiculized, saying the heart is something romantic, it's poetic, but, you know, it's not... It does not have particular powers. Today, fortunately, we know so much more that the heart is by far the organ with the strongest electromagnetic field. As I just mentioned, it's on magnetically, they can already measure it through, it's easy to measure nowadays, how it is up to 5,000 times stronger than the magnetic field of the brain. Electrically, it's 100 times stronger. So the electromagnetic field of the heart, yes, has a huge is radiating up to what can be measured. I mean, 3 to 4 meters, but it goes much further. It's the whole energy field around the body is mostly created actually by your heart, and the language often of the heart is feelings, it's emotions. The speed of feelings and emotions also much quicker than thoughts. So it is the emotion that has much bigger and quicker impact than our thoughts. So very often it's the emotion will come first and then our thought, and then our body obviously reacts. Now, the moment you align heart and brain, so the moment you come into a state of a peaceful state, a compassionate state, a loving state in your heart, immediately the brain will like say, ah, oh, this is good, this is nice, we're in a secure and a good place. And so the field expands, because the moment the moment we get signals like this is stressful, there's a fearful situation, everything contracts. But the moment when there's coherent, more loving state, the whole field can expand, and we obviously much more, we can be much more receptive to different subtle energies, to intuition. We can capture so much more, and it is a very healthy state. It allows us to discern more, to take more clear decisions. But this coherent heart-brain state vibrates on 0.1 hertz. And it's exactly also the same vibration of the Earth magnetic, electromagnetic field. So it's very interesting that the moment we come more into this heart coherent state, we're actually on the same vibrational level as the Earth. And this HeartMath has done quite a lot of advanced studies on, and they even created, and I find this beautiful and fascinating, the Global Coherence Initiative. And this is a initiative that they created with many different monitors placed around the world, and where groups of people at particular times, normally with full moon and with new moon, join in heart coherence. You can even measure it. I mean, on your own app, they have an application. So you can see the moment you're entering into this heart coherent state. It's basically a state where you feel joyful and happy and content. That state, it's not just by random, but you can induce that state. And the more you can create it, the more you are in a coherent level. And that's feeding the field constantly. So the moment I'm in a more compassionate and caring state, I'm radiating. I'm like this radio. All of us, we radiate that into the field. And that's energy. So imagine the more we are radiating that heart coherence into the field, the more we're actually shifting and vibrating with the Earth. And I find that power, you know, experience at small scale with the Pyramid for Light and saw what it can do. But imagine we're more with that worldwide, what it can shift. Yeah. And this is being measured. That's what I find is fascinating, what we can do together.
Right.
Yeah. Individually, but also collectively.
I've firsthand witnessed the power of positive thinking and manifestation, you know, law of attraction. So I think it's all part of the same thing, that to where, you know, if I'm having, you know, positive thoughts, if I'm having a good day, if I, you know, desire something in a positive way that could benefit, you know, not only myself but others, it often, yeah, you know, just manifests. It happens. And, you know, positive, yes, good things follow, and they come back to you if you put them out there. And I've seen this firsthand. So, you know, yeah, you know, the power of this is very real.
Yeah, it creates the moment you come more into this state, in this coherent state. And as you rightfully saying, you desire something which is beneficial for yourself, but also your environment. You come into this field of this unified feel of all opportunities, and where you attract it towards you, it just manifests. You come into a field of real synchronicities. So it's not just by coincidence. You really come into a field where you manifest it. Yeah,
it's a very fascinating, wonderful thing to witness. Yeah. Now, Marika, thank you so much for coming on today. That was fascinating information. If people would like to find out more about yourself and the Pyramid for Light and all the work that you're doing, what's the best way they can do so?
For the Pyramid for Light, we set up a whole website because we do retreats there. But with the COVID, we also did online retreats. So we walked people over. We did it over a course of 6 months, where we walked the whole chakra path going into the Pyramid for Light. That is described on the website, the Pyramid for Light, which is www.pyramid4light.org. That's the website there. I'm also involved very much in, as I just mentioned, bringing further people together into this heart field, this heart intelligence. And for that, I'm involved myself in a foundation since quite many years. And it's called, quite appropriately, www.unitingpeople.org. Yeah. It unites people for the purpose. Yeah.
That's great. I will have those links in the description for everyone to go check out. Marika, thank
That's
you
great.
So much again. And I'd love to talk to you again sometime in the future.
Yeah, with pleasure. And thank you for having me on your show, Chris. And keep up this great work and making the forbidden knowledge accessible to everyone. I think that's great.
So thank you so much.
For doing.
I will do that. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we will talk again tomorrow.